73-year-old grandmother Delois Brown was shot and killed on her porch on Olney Street in Dorchester on Saturday. There were children playing on the porch when it happened. Police say she was not the intended target. There have been and there will be myriad conversations about the crime itself. And it is a terrible, terrible loss. So here on Radio Boston, we want to talk about the trauma for families, neighborhoods, communities, and we want to understand better how the city responds to that trauma and supports those experiencing it on the ground. Earlier this afternoon, we spoke with Mark Scott, director of the Division of Violence Prevention at the Boston Public Health Commission. And I started by asking Mark how his team responds when they get word of a tragedy like the shooting on Saturday.
We have a set of, if you will, systems in place. So it's not so much dependent on me or what I think or thought. I happened to be getting a haircut when this happened. And once I got out of the barber's chair, this happened around the corner from where I live. And so by the time I picked my phone up, the team was already there, already en route. And so what they're doing when they get to a scene, and they're working collaboratively with a lot of other partners there, they get there. Then we're not there before the police are. So BPD, EMS, two very important partners for us, are very supportive of us in our efforts. So the team is there, and they're really making contact with residents and trying to support them. The family, of course, would end up going to the hospital. A lot of key, not all of the family, but a lot of key members of the family. EMS also would have transported the victim, Ms. Brown, to the hospital. So there's a team at the hospital, Boston Medical Center, and so they provided a lot of support there at the hospital and continue to do so now. I'm actually joining you on this call, having just wrapped up a conference call with 15, 16 people on it from various different agencies across the city who are all working together to support the family in the aftermath of this. But all of that begins with our ability to be there at the scene in collaboration with EMS, BPD, and also the Street Outreach Advocacy and Response Team, SOAR, formerly known as the Street Workers. So we're all there together, working together to make a connection and begin to build up a response that will help people at some point enter some kind of recovery from all of this.
I imagine, Mark, that most people wouldn't know that there are conference calls of 15 or 16 people at a time focused on surrounding and supporting a family in a time of grief and loss like this. In those conversations, what are you hoping to accomplish? What are your goals? I mean, goals is such a bloodless word. What do you need to do for the family? What do you want to accomplish?
Well, every incident is different. Every family is different. And so, we're really trying to assess what they need. What have we done? What can we do? What do we need to do? In a case like this, one of our key partners is the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute. And so they were connected with the family over the weekend and sat down with them yesterday and began to, map out concerns. There's a need. The family, she lived there, right? So there's an immediate need of, we don't want to be here right now. We're not sure why this happened. It might happen again. We're not safe. We don't feel safe. So we worked with the city. We worked with the Department of Neighborhood Development, Office of Housing Stability to get them some temporary housing. But they need food, they need transportation, their children, they may need car seats. So it's very concrete, nitty gritty things that people need. There is and will be an ongoing need for mental health support. So one of the key partners in this is the Bolton Street Health Center. Another key partner in this is the Family Nurturing Center, which is actually right across the street from where this occurred. And then Boston Trauma Response, which is a part of the Justice Resource Institute.
So there's so much there, and it is all happening in the context of a pandemic that has eaten away everyone's reserves under the best of circumstances. So I think about the fact that grief fatigue, mental exhaustion have already set in place for everyone. And then you have the sense that someone who represents our most innocent and our most revered, our most innocent are our children, our most revered are our elders. We have a grandmother dead, a 3-year-old child witnesses it, an 8-year-old child witnesses it, and then you're expected to go on with everyday life. How should we understand the trauma that the neighborhood, the community, are experiencing right now.
It's a profound trauma. I think one of the things that's unfortunate in this too is that we've experienced this before. This is not the first grandmother in recent years that we've lost. This was not the only violence that occurred over the weekend. Community violence is not the only form of violence that occurred over the weekend. Where we want to project ourselves is towards healing, repair, recovery, and not holding each other tight is what we have to do. It's what I see us doing. It's hard to talk about that right now in this aftermath. It's just Tuesday, but that's the way we become strong. This neighborhood, Bolton, Geneva, is I live around the corner, so I know it's a great neighborhood, and it's drawing on its resources to be strong, to repair, to build back in a way that's strong.
Let's step back from the neighborhood for a minute. What's the best way the whole city can support the neighborhood, and what about even a larger vision? How does Greater Boston support the neighborhood? I'm thinking of Mona Lisa Smith of Mothers for Justice and Equality, reminding me that all children are our children, all grandmothers are our grandmothers. How do others show up for the neighborhood and the family right now?
I was funny. You mentioned Mona Lisa Smith at Mothers for Justice and Equality, and they weren't on this immediate call, but they are frequently on these calls. They do a lot of this work in Mattapan, and they do it all over the city. They're a key partner for us in Mattapan. And, you know, one of the things that they've been able to develop some support around, as well as other partners that I've mentioned, is around something as basic as food. So one of the ways you can support this work as a city is, let me mention three things. One, you mentioned Mothers for Justice and Equality. That's a survivor-created, survivor-led organization. Follow their leadership. Support them. Another way, Mother's Day is coming up. I mentioned the Lewis D. Brown Peace Institute. We won't be out walking because of the pandemic, but we will be doing the Mother's Day Peace Walk virtually this year. They will. I'll be there virtually. And it's actually a fundraising event for the Peace Institute. So come, give, participate. From my mind, it's a signature event for the whole of the city. And it's healing. Walking is good for you. Walking together is even better.
And Mark, what do you want people who experience this loss as something that has happened somewhere else to someone else rather than a communal loss? What do you want them to understand?
I think the word that comes to mind in response to that is the importance of empathy and compassion, and to feel that for another human being, another community, and to be able to receive it when you need it. If the SARS-CoV-2 virus hasn't taught us anything, it's taught us that we're in this together, and we're only going to get out of it together. Violence has a way of being viral, is a way of spreading. It can happen anywhere. It does happen more in some neighborhoods than others, but it can happen anywhere. And the way to be ready and resilient and strong to be able to recover and repair is to care about it when it happens in other places.
That's Mark Scott, Director of the Division of Violence Prevention at the Boston Public Health Commission. Mark, really appreciate your time and your work. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
All right, let's step back now from the direct support response for Delois Brown's family and neighborhood, and let's get some more context about what we know about community violence and prevention measures. We welcome back to the show Isaac Yablo, who is a data and impact specialist with SOAR Boston, the city's program for street outreach, advocacy, and response. Isaac, thanks for coming back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start. I know you were listening to the conversation we had with Mark, and you heard him say in that interview we did that they're working with SOAR to support this family. Is there anything Mark talked about that you'd like to build on or fill in for us?
Yeah, definitely. So similar to what Mark Scott said, I want to reiterate the collaborative work that's happening with the neighborhood trauma teams, with SOAR Boston, with Boston Trauma Response, and all the other community partners that are really working to address these heightened levels of gang and gun-related violence. And I would also reiterate what he said in that the main thing is just trying to provide support for the family right now. and trying to identify their needs, and then moving to devise a more macro level strategy at the same time, while also still paying attention to the needs of the family.
Do you have research on the trauma experience in communities after events like this?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that it's what I would describe as, like, after a situation like this, that the fumes are definitely still in the air, right? Because a situation like this impacts everyone from the 3-year-olds to the other older adults that are in the community, right? And so I think that the most of the research says that, similar to what Mark Scott said, this is not the first individual that we've lost. That will not be the last. These communities that we're discussing in Dorchester, Roxbury, Mattapan, Hyde Park, and East Boston are extremely resilient. They've been dealing with this compound trauma for years now, right? And so, similar to what he said, it's about bringing everyone together and working to really adequately address that trauma.
Isaac, I'm mindful there's going to be a lot of conversations about the crime itself, about the shooting, and about other crimes as we head into summer. There is always a discussion about violent crime in our neighborhoods. I'd Absolutely. Like to focus our conversation on root causes and, mm-hmm. and what you know from your research about how we should think about root causes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think there's a number of causes, but the ones that I've really been honing in on center around increased access to firearms. And more importantly, the firearms that individuals have access to, they're higher powered, right? So long gone are the days where we have individuals running around with firearms that are held together by duct tape. These are military grade weapons that are comparable to what the police carry, right? So there's an increase of firearms and firepower. There's a continuance of social media driven conflict, right? So whether it's Facebook or Instagram, individuals that would otherwise have no access to each other, and I think it's been amplified with the pandemic and people being inside, they use social media to gain access to each other, right? And so a lot of the conflicts that we're dealing with in SOAR Boston and Boston Trauma Response, neighborhood trauma teams, we're dealing with the social media driven violence, right? And then the third thing, respect to everyone's gender identity, right? So what I've said is non-male identifying individuals are also involved, right? So the perception a lot of the time is that this is only men or young boys driving this violence, when in reality it's individuals that identify with multiple different kinds of genders, right? So it's women, men, trans, non-binary, all these different groups of individuals that are really driving the violence. So it's not only men. Those are the three macro level trends that I'm really seeing.
And where are the systemic trends? Where do the systemic trends that we've especially been in conversation about over the last year around systemic racism, disenfranchisement, disinvestment in neighborhoods and communities, where in your research, where do they fit into the picture?
Well, I think they're the center of the picture, right? So there's a wonderful quote that I always go to. It's by James Diego Vahil, and it goes like this: a complex problem such as gang violence necessitates examining many factors such as neighborhood effects, poverty, culture conflict, and sociocultural marginalization and social control, among other gang dynamics. And to me, that says until we address these macro level social issues like poverty or sociocultural marginalization, that's what's really driving this violence. And so to prevent the violence, we have to address these issues.
What's working? I mean, I'm assuming we've talked over the last couple of years with people from SOAR, the city, heads of community organizations working to support high-risk youth. What's working?
A lot of things are working. It can seem kind of traumatic and stressful when something like this happens, but that's not to take away from the good work that's being done. So the collaboration aspect of this, the follow-up, the wraparound services, similar to what Mark just alluded to with the food insecurity, but really honing in on what the legitimate issues that we're dealing with are. Yeah, we can deal with the shooting, but is it only a shooting that we're dealing with, or is it also a heightened level of basic needs, insecurities that these individuals are dealing with, right? So there's a lot of different things that are working, even though it may seem kind of stressful right now. There's a lot of different things that are working.
And in our last minute or so, Isaac, what policy recommendations come out of that? As you look at what works and you get the data, where are the policy recommendations right now?
Well, I think that there's recommendations to be made, obviously, regarding access to firearms, right? But then there's also recommendations to be made regarding legitimate reinvestment in these communities that have been dealing with these heightened levels of gang and gun violence for you know, 30 years now. The program I worked for, SOAR, formerly known as the Street Workers, was created in 1990. And we're dealing with some of the same gangs and groups that we were dealing with back then, right? So I think as far as if we're talking about policy, if we need to talk about legitimate reinvestment in schools, in access to social resources, and access to the economy, just that you know, that is the heartbeat of many of these communities. So
that is Isaac Yablo, who is a data and impact specialist with SOAR Boston, which is the city's program for street outreach, advocacy, and response. Isaac, always good to have you on the show. I'm sure we will talk to you again in the coming months. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listeners, that's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wolfman, with help from Stephen Gelman and Hafsa Qureshi. Our engineer today is Marquise Neal. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening today and for calling in. Do join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.